In a fall of so much science fiction, television, movies, books, comics, there's so much to do. How can we know what is worth our time? We're going to investigate today on Sci-Fi Weekly's Pilot Roundup as we take a look at the pilots for Luke Cage, Timeless, and Westworld.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Sci-Fi Weekly.
Welcome back to Sci-Fi Weekly, the one podcast where we all know that we're just one lab coat away from being real scientists. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson. Be sure to subscribe to Sci-Fi Weekly and the Popcorn Talk network on YouTube, The Popcorn Talk on Twitter, Sci-Fi Weekly on Twitter and on Facebook. Jesse Klein is on assignment this week.
I want to know more about this assignment.
Yeah, we sent him to investigate disturbances in the time, space-time vortex.
And the Force. Simultaneous force manipulators. Disturbances, yes.
There's problems. There's problems out there.
He's the man that we trust to fix
them. We sent Jesse to deal with it at the last second. But thank you guys for joining us. And thank you, Christian Blatt.
Hi, everybody.
Who is joining me in the studio this week. Christian, normally in the chat role.
I was going to be watching anyway, so I was like, it's all right. And as I wrote on Twitter, I'm the emergency medical hologram. I'm the Robert Picardo for Sci-Fi Weekly. You hit a button, I'm here 5 minutes later.
There you go. Thank you for coming in.
At Christian DMZ. Let me get my plug in before I forget, because I'm really bad at my own plugs.
Yeah, I mean, you got a plug, or how else do people know where to stalk you in this modern day and age?
Yeah, I know. I welcome stalkers, absolutely.
It's also apparently a Mets day.
Yes. Hey, what could be nerdier than rooting for the Mets? Come on.
Yes, it's just as sad as any science fiction
That's
nerd.
That's true.
But there's a lot of news to cover, so before we get to the our looks at Timeless, at Westworld, and at Luke Cage, and we're going to look at this, specifically the pilots of each of those, we're going to go through the news, and like we've got some Doctor Who Christmas special news to discuss, some more breaking news about getting to Mars this week, some cool stuff, but first we got to go through the headlines, and there's only one speed that we can do it at, and that is ludicrous speed.
Go!
Two superhero films officially got titles this week. Hugh Jackman announced via Twitter that Wolverine 3 is going to be simply called Logan. And Ben Affleck confirmed that his Batman follow-up to Dawn of Justice is just going to be called The Batman. So after the failures of X-Men Apocalypse and Superman versus Batman Dawn of Justice, the studios that are trying to figure out Marvel's formula, it's colons, get rid of the colons, and it's shorter titles. Maybe that will get audiences to watch
one word or we don't make it. That's basically what both of those studios say, yeah. Marvel's announced that Winston Duke has been cast as M'Baku in the upcoming Black Panther movie. The character comes from a rival tribe that worships the white apes, with M'Baku angling to take the throne from T'Challa. Oh, man, ape. We're definitely excited.
I'm sorry I wrote that pun for you. It's real bad.
I just realized that as I was halfway through it, I'm like, oh, man, ape. And I was like, oh, I should have read first. I'm
sorry to the audience, too. This is not any better.
I like
don't
it better.
Don't strain, Guillermo del Toro fans, because the sci-fi FX series featuring scientifically accurate, quote-unquote, vampires has been picked up for a fourth and final season. Fans of the show reportedly said that the ending makes sense. It's good timing for the show. They just hope that that's enough time to kill off the Zach character. Effing kill him already. Five of you got that.
But not this Zach character.
No, not me. That's why I'm mad. I'm even madder.
Because he's dragging your name down. Yeah. do you dread the return of Carl Urban? Apparently Fox feels the same way, as they've officially passed on the sequel script to Judge Dredd. Co-creator John Wanger is confident that the sequel, entitled Judge Death, will eventually happen, But writer Alex Garland are, at least for now, at the mercy of 20th Century Judges. I think they should just make a sequel to the Sylvester Stallone one. Just forget the in-between. Go right to
I Am the Law.
There you go. Haley Atwell teased Comic Book Resources this week with a potential return to Peggy Carter, saying that she doesn't feel like she's said goodbye to her. Fans have been begging for the return of this gorgeous, powerful character and her return to ABC to answer for the cliffhangers and tell the rest of her story as she forms S.H.I.E.L.D., but you know what? No shtick. No shtick on this one. ABC, Disney, Marvel, whichever department I've got to talk to, what do I have to do to make this happen? Do I have to pay somebody off? Do I have to blackmail somebody? I'll dig stuff up. Do I need to stand outside the offices of one of your buildings wearing a red fedora just in the rain until you greenlight at least a TV movie to round it out? I'll do it. Don't doubt me. I'll do it.
I'd like to see that. According to the comments by creator James DeMonico, The Purge is being developed and shopped as an anthology-style TV series. So get your axes ready, because whether this is going to be a scripted series or a reality show, it's reportedly going to be decided based on the outcome of the November election next summer.
The Purge, Donald Trump's America. It's going to be huge.
Oh, God. Mark Millar took to Twitter to say that he knows his choice to play the lead role in Superior, which is a comic book that tells the story of a young boy who makes a wish and becomes his favorite superhero. And we know that actor's name.
And his name is John C.
The Trainwreck star reportedly let Millar out of the Boston Crab hole that he was in as soon as the tweet was sent out. And that is it for today's Ludicrous Speed News.
It's a lot more exhausting in person, by the way. I feel like there's a lot of pressure to get through.
It's very
fast-paced. Yeah.
But that's why we got to slow it down when there's important topics to talk about.
All right, good.
Thank you to all you guys who are joining us live in the chat room. Media Shock, Jacob Shields, Captain Travis. We appreciate you guys tuning in. I want to talk about Doctor Who. Not just in general, which I'd
often
do.
Which we could do, but...
Yeah, but today I want to talk about the Christmas special, because we got some weird, supposed leaks about what the plot line's going to be.
Yeah.
Not spoilers to, the ending or anything like that, or how we're going to get into Pearl Mackey's character, which who is not going to be in the Christmas
special. That's what
special.
They keep telling us. And every time they say it, I start to think, well, maybe she will be.
I mean, we'll catch her at the tail, but I really think they do want this to just stand alone.
Right. It won't be like how we weren't going to meet Clara and then we actually met her several times.
They can't do that again. Well, I say that. Moffat could do it again. But what we did find out, and this is interesting for me being a huge comic book and superhero nerd, is that there's going to be a superhero character in Doctor Who. It's going to be played by Justin Whitman, who you've seen in he was on Weeds for a little while. Or did I say his name? Justin Chatwin.
Oh, Chatwin.
Chatwin. Justin Chatwin. He also played Goku in the ill-fated live-action Dragon Ball Z movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't want to judge him on that.
Yeah, look, he was just looking for a paycheck.
Who we're talking about. But supposedly he's going to be playing a square-jawed, American superhero of one kind or another.
Right.
I'm excited about this.
No, I'm very excited. I love the idea that there would be a superhero. I mean, the Doctor, I'm sure, has met a superhero before, whether we've had the story or not. I mean, think about all the time that he's traveled. There were some interesting things in that same story. There were allusions that it could be someone from an organization that we've seen before. It could be a time agent, just like Captain Jack. But I hate these little dribs and drabs of leaks that, 2 weeks later, something comes out. It's like, oh, just kidding. That's not what it's going to be about. But I think we're getting close enough that this is what we're actually going to see. We're actually going to see this superhero, and I think it'll be great. Because I love whatever Peter Capaldi does. I know some people in the chat room, not big Capaldi fans, but he's officially my favorite. So whatever he wants to do, I'm on board.
I like Capaldi. And like, because I host the Doctor Who After Show right. on our sister network AfterBuzz TV. And I've been very clear about how much I like Capaldi as the Doctor. I think he's done an amazing job. I have been less of a fan of what Moffat has done with the show since Capaldi took over.
Yeah.
I think that he, like, Moffat's told his best stories when he told his best stories when Matt Smith was the Doctor. And he's sort of just trying to figure out what to do. And he loves this stuff and the show too much to, like, let go. And he finally is. Like, this is last season. So I'm sort of banking on this being a big season for him. Like, he's, like, I think he's probably had an idea.
Yeah, he's
like
probably going to go for broke. All the stuff that he's like, oh, we'll get to one day. It's like, oh, we have to get to it
Which
now.
Is, I think, what this is. Because, like, especially today with, like, superheroes everywhere. Yeah. It seems only logical that at some point the Doctor would come across somebody who, by some either science or cosmic magic of some kind.
Radioactive spider, who knows?
Yeah, whatever it is, would find superpowers in some form. It makes sense. And that's why, so I think like that like sci-fi approach to superheroes, it would be fun for him to tackle. And like, what does the Doctor do with somebody who has like super strength and can fly and all this? Like, what if he met... I did an outline at one point, just like a fan, just like, what would this as a gag, a game for myself, like a writing exercise.
Right.
What if the Doctor met Batman?
How much detail did you go into? Because I'd like to read this.
I had like a scene by scene outline at one point.
Oh, I love
this. It was Matt Smith, so it was more polarized.
Okay,
as opposed to Capaldi, who like we've referred to as the Batman Doctor.
Yes.
Because he's so dark. But that like darkness of and a crime, like a real life Batman, like the idea of like who he would be in, who the comics would be inspired by, kind of
yeah,
thing.
I wonder if the Doctor feels about superheroes, you know, probably having encountered them a number of times, if he feels the same way he does about whimsical robots, which we know he does not enjoy. Whimsical robots,
the Doctor's sort of a superhero, like when it's just like he has a different form of superpowers, they're in a magic wand or glasses, depending on what era we're talking,
right,
what
exactly.
episodes we're talking about.
Sometimes both.
But I'm excited about that. The other details that have come out, Nardal, who we met last Christmas and is now currently inhabiting a giant robot, he's going to be, they're calling him the Anti-Companion.
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
I think that they mean, you know, like Donna's grandfather was his semi non-companion in that one special with Tennant. I guess that's what they mean, right?
Like that's like a companion light. It's not anti-companion.
Right. Well, that's a good point, yeah.
I guess anti-companion is like reluctantly aboard the TARDIS, I guess.
The Doctor's going to kidnap someone.
Yeah. Oh, God. That might be accurate. Anyway. In other news, stuff I wanted to talk about, this could have been a real simple story. We could have done a ludicrous speed, but I like speculating. Sigourney Weaver, was talking to Wired this week. And, like, we know that she had been, in discussions with Neil Blomkamp and, I forget what studio, it is that does the Alien movies, but about doing Alien 5. And that fell apart, partially because her schedule picked up. And we didn't know exactly what it was she was working on. But now she's hinted that it might be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Which would be amazing. Because I think adding Sigourney Weaver to any universe is going to make that universe better.
Yeah.
Even Avatar.
The only thing, the only like piece that we have that might make this true is that like they asked her what she was watching these days and she's like, oh, I'm watching a whole bunch of the Marvel movies, and she was like complimenting them, and they were like, wait, so why are you watching Marvel? They're like they I'm glad they didn't let it go, but they're like, why are you watching? And she's like, oh, I can't say. And that says a lot.
That does
because
say a lot.
Say like when you can't talk about something, it means that there's something you're not allowed to say.
Yeah.
And Marvel, of course, is very famous for their locking stuff down. So I'm curious from you guys in the chat, and I'm curious, Christian, what speculation you might have, like what roles might Sigourney Weaver
Well, it's interesting because, look, I love Sigourney Weaver. She is an actress of a certain age, though, so you have to think of characters in a little bit more advanced age. Not Aunt May, thankfully, because I think she would be wasted on Aunt May. But and that's, you know, sort of tertiarily in the cinematic universe.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. But, like, that's the thing about Marvel movies have been that they've utilized people of all ages in all kinds of different roles. They haven't been shy about casting people who you wouldn't expect right alongside people that you're like, that is spot on, perfect.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard to remember, but even casting Robert Downey Jr. was somewhat controversial at the time, but now you can't imagine anything else. I'd like to see her, in my mind, as somebody royal, you know, maybe the wife of Black Bolt of the Inhumans or something, you know, somebody who's...
Medusa, I think, needs to be younger because I want to see her...
In action.
Not that Sigourney Weaver couldn't be in action as an older woman, but I want to see her in her youth, Medusa.
Yeah, I can agree
that's
with
my
that,
only
sure.
need on that, is that like I want to see those characters find their spots among royalty. And I think you can only really do that with a younger... Like, I'm talking like, I would love to see them as like, almost like early 20s, teenagers, like trying to figure this out. Because the Inhuman story, like that royalty, that royal blood... Like, and that could work, I guess. Like it's an interest. It would depend on what other characters they choose to put into the royal family if they ever do the Inhumans story, because it's been so questioned.
Here's
what I want to see her as.
Yes, I want to hear this.
And this is just me and like my, because she's one of my favorite characters, Janet Van Dyne,
the Wasp.
So she would be. The Wasp to Michael Douglas's
the one that's
Ant-Man.
Vanished and, you know, disappeared in the whatever you call the little Ant-Man microverse or whatever. Yeah.
So that would make her Evangeline Lilly's mother.
Mom.
And so, like, there's everything that everything indicates that we're going to meet Janet in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah. I think it would only be fair if we meet the Wasp as the Elder Wasp.
Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne are, as a duo, especially my favorite characters in Marvel canon. Especially in their early days, like them as a duo is just so electric.
When they were together, it was great. That story took a very awkward, unfortunate turn.
I hate when it turned in that one issue that was like a miscommunication between a writer and an artist that changed the direction for those characters.
Slaps her in the face or whatever.
Forever, which was supposed to not happen, according to the writer. But that aside, I think that could be
I agree.
Yeah, the other one that people are speculating is not a named character, but that she would be a sort of like human mentor to Captain Marvel.
Oh, I like that.
Because you're talking about Marvel's first female-led superhero movie, and putting her, like Sigourney Weaver playing a like age-tested military pilot... just works.
Yeah, it just seems appropriate that she would play, you know, somebody in the military, somebody that has a lot of experience. And I think that either one of those would be great. Now that you've said the Wasp, I kind of don't want it to be anything else, though.
Yeah. Well, there's Susan Sarandon's name has also been floated for that role, which would
also be great. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people who would be great for that role. But there's some cool stuff. I like that you people are excited, or at least that Captain Travis is excited about Janet Van Dyne. Somebody's excited.
And Captain Travis is very excited. Yeah.
So, but let's go. Let's keep going forward. And to our sci-fi in real life story of the week, because we got to talk about Mars again. This week, Boeing CEO Dennis Muhlenberg. This is in response to Elon Musk, because last week we talked about Elon Musk and his like goal to reach Mars. It sent like a 100-person crew to live on Mars. Then Dennis Muhlenberg fired back this week. I'm convinced the first person to step foot on Mars will be arriving there in a Boeing rocket.
I like that.
I'm so excited about this, not because either one of them is anywhere close,
right?
But the fact that there are, I want these two to really go at it. I want them to be fighting about who's going to get to Mars, because that's exactly how we're going to get there.
Well, I mean, the competition makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, historically, you look at the great space race, you know,
exactly.
All of a sudden Sputnik goes up. JFK's like, we're going to put a man on the moon at the end of the decade. Probably a lot of people were like, wait, we are? and they had to scramble and try to make it happen. So I like this. I like the idea that they're going to try and outrun Richard. And hey, if Richard Branson wants to step in and try and do it before either of them, that's even better, because then you have all these people working on getting people to Mars.
Yeah, they're working with the NASA already. Both of them are working with NASA in different capacities, but Boeing has obviously had a long history with them, having developed a lot of the technology that originally launched the space shuttles. But so, I mean, it's real. There's not a lot to talk about here, but I was so excited by this because I want these two to really compete with each other. I want them both to get to Mars. There's huge. It's another planet.
Yeah.
They can both have like a hemisphere and it'll be fine.
There's plenty of room.
But this could be the private space race that we need to really get us to interstellar travel.
Right. It doesn't look like NASA is going to have any of the funding that would actually get us somewhere like that.
No,
so it is going to have to happen.
The country
doesn't.
We don't have money to pay hospital bills. We can't pay as much as we should because it's going forward.
Right.
Always forward. Forward,
always. Forward,
always. And some of you understand why that's a perfect transition into our pilot roundup for this week. I wanted to take a look at the pilots that we got, and we got a whole bunch of them.
This was a great week for...
And we couldn't even fit them all in because there's so many. I didn't have time to watch them all. Like, I haven't seen Frequency.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet either.
I haven't seen No Tomorrow, which is like an apocalypse romance show on CW.
Not X-Men Apocalypse, not that guy. It's not a romance
not
with
that
him.
One.
Okay.
I
don't
watch
need to see
that.
Him fall in love.
I would be a way better movie than X-Men Apocalypse if they did a romance with him. I'd watch the hell out of it. the three I wanted to look at, because they seem to be the most like spread across the board of like expectation, between expectations, established things and new things. Timeless, Westworld, and Luke Cage. Let's talk about Westworld first.
Yeah, let's do it.
What did you've seen the pilot?
I
what
have.
Did you think of the first episode of Westworld?
So I thought that Westworld was beautiful. It looked so great. You could tell that they had spent all that money on it. And the cast, you just during the opening credits, you're like, wait, they're in it too? And Anthony Hopkins. Okay, great. So before it even starts, you're like, all right, this is going to be just something to behold. And I get it, it's a series, so the pacing can be much more deliberate than a movie. So you have to be a little bit more patient, because I watched it after basically one day after watching 8 episodes of Luke Cage. So of course, I'm like, well, I want more. I don't want to have to wait till next week. But I thought it looked cool. I love the premise. And I like that you're starting to see the early signs of trouble. That's not a particularly spoilery thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, that things might not be going well in Westworld, but nothing disastrous
happens. A sci-fi movie or TV show where things aren't going according to plan?
Right, exactly. The guy in charge, there might be something wrong with him, but we don't know. But I thought it was great. I'm very interested in seeing more, for sure. My wife fell asleep during it, but it was because we were watching it late. And she went back and she's like, oh my God, it made so much more sense now.
What I really enjoyed about this pilot was that it felt the way that HBO often does. It felt like something I had not seen ever before on TV.
I definitely agree with that.
The artistry that they put into this pilot, in that they were not just like presenting a story, which a lot of things do, like Timeless, which we'll talk about in a second, like they told you a story. This was, they framed it in Westworld, they framed things with certain, like they used poetry to frame the episode with this interview. They used imagery of like the phonograph, I think it's a phonograph, what, the automatic piano player, because the close-up on that is the perfect...
And you did notice the music, by the way, for the automatic piano, right? It was songs like Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun.
Yes.
Just great little touches like that, that it's like, huh, what is that? Like, oh my God! So it's just sort of this like amazing...
Me,
yeah.
It threw me for a second. But like, and that was cool. And like, you almost get excited about that and forget to stop and like notice...
Pay attention to what's happening.
But like, not even just that, but like the fact that the way that they use it, they show these close-ups of it spinning, is entirely set up to be a perfect metaphor for the fact that the hosts...
Yes.
The androids are running a script. All of them are just they're just an advanced version of that automatic piano player.
And I like that, you know, as the episode went along, different situations presented themselves. The androids were in some, the hosts were in some different situations, but then there's some banter back and forth between them that we'd seen earlier. So it's like, ultimately, it doesn't matter what happens to them. These two have that relationship. They will interact in this way, even if it starts off differently. So I thought it was interesting. It's like, yeah, you can see this is very well programmed, and I'm sure nothing's going to go wrong. Everybody's going to live happily ever after. It's clearly perfectly laid out. No flaws, no mistakes, nothing.
Yeah.
I don't need to watch anymore. Nothing's going to happen. No, it looked great, though.
But it looked great. Like, this, it was constructed in a way that was a movie. They gave you different plot lines to follow. They gave you hints. Like, there was a point, I think, like 45 minutes in or so, I thought, is this, like, it felt like it was almost complete. Like, this was like they were finishing a whole story. Like, yeah. Something goes wrong and they fix it. But it was in that last 15 minutes, that left fourth act or so, that they really just brought everything to a head, and it all just started to, it like seemed like they had cleaned everything up,
yeah.
But then little things like the I'm calling, I think they refer to him as the Man in Black, but like in my head, he's the Black Rider.
Oh,
like the that character is so dark and interesting. Because what is he?
Yeah, no, and there is definitely, you're right, in that last act, there are so many more questions, you know, and throughout, you're just like, what exactly is Ed Harris up to? I can't wait to find out
more.
And
what made me really love this was the, beyond as a science fiction show, was that it set up the, it makes you question your reality. It makes you question the reality of the show, your reality, and then look back at it, and that only raises like more questions about each and every character involved here.
Yeah.
What, who is who? Who is real? I didn't know that, like, I didn't know going in that James Marsden was going to be a host.
Yeah. I mean, you get the impression that he's a tourist.
Yeah.
And then that was a great curveball, because I did not expect that.
Yeah,
so.
It immediately woke you up to the question of like, what is real? Who is, and I'm honestly right now questioning every single one of the people in this world as to whether they're real. I'm questioning the Man in Black if he's real or not. Like, I know that like he is like actively doing things that the hosts can't.
Right.
But the fact is with the craziness of the creator, I forget his name offhand.
Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Hannibal Lecter.
I
do forget his name, though.
But yeah, the character's name. Dr. Robert Ford. What if the Man in Black was put there by him? Because this is a guy who seems to love the idea of creating a world and leaving bits of chaos in it. Little like ghosts in the machine, to use an Asimov term, and that's what we are getting out of the little twitches that they have.
And I sort of liked how much we would see those, and you know, sort of the usage of flies and things and twitches. You know, all these little touches that obviously are much more significant. I do feel like this is one of those pilots where, after the show or the first season ends, you go back and watch it, there'll be like a million things. You're like, oh yeah, it was all in here, but of course I didn't know what to look for.
Yeah, you know? So let's like keep going on looking at all these pilots.
Sure,
because we're just doing a quick like sort of look through them, and then we want to compare them. Timeless, on the other hand,
yes.
Timeless is a pilot. Like, I was genuinely surprised by Timeless. The premise it was a very well written pilot. That I will give it. Like, it is from start to finish engaging. You are paying attention to the characters. There's just enough nuance to their lives and what's happening there that if not glued to my screen, at least paying attention.
Yeah, and that's all. I mean, that's especially a network TV pilot where, you know, the expectations are you need to succeed to some to some extent right away. Otherwise, you know, you won't get to the third episode. So I think that, yeah, they want us to actually care about these characters. Whereas like an HBO or Netflix show, it's like, oh, we'll sprinkle that out through the first six episodes. It'll be all right. So yeah, they're definitely showing us who these people are. And we get to see the, you know, the premise of the show pretty quickly, you know, and it's sort of easily relatable for anyone who's watched sci-fi. You're like, okay, so it's some sort of like Stargate Quantum Leap hybrid. I'm in. I want to know more. And yeah. At the same time, it's not alienating for the non-sci-fi fan, which is, of course, very important for network television.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I think it starts to find its flaws, though, is the so it's a very well-written pilot, but what it – and, like, so I like the Lucy character, this historian who is just sort of thrust into this environment and doesn't really know how to react to it. She just flies by the seat of her pants. Like, she wants to help because the government tells her, we need you to help save the day. Like, intentionally, you have to stop people from preventing the Hindenburg from crashing.
Yes.
It's an interesting moral dilemma of we have to actively prevent someone from saving lives in order to protect.
It's the let's kill Hitler dilemma. You know, it's you can argue about it all you want, and there's obviously cases to be made for both. But
the let's kill Hitler dilemma is something that I've seen in plenty of places on science fiction. Yes. Like Doctor Who has done it plenty of times. There have been whole shows devoted to it. Any time travel novel or anything has wrestled with that dilemma, even to the point of like just Back to the Future with like, oh, if I take this sports almanac back to the past with me,
I'll become Donald Trump.
Oh God. But the pilot didn't offer me much that I haven't seen before. And that was sort of its flaw was in originality.
Right.
Was that like, it was well-written in terms of the characters, but in a landscape where there's like six different time travel shows on television right now in one form or another.
Yeah.
And that's not, I think that's just new stuff.
Yeah. Oh no. Season. You can find so many things.
It doesn't even count the older ones, or the other stuff that's just been on for a while. I wanted something that was going to give me if I'm investing in a new TV show, investing my time in a landscape where there's tons of stuff to watch, I want to know what this is bringing to time travel that I have not seen before, that I have not experienced, that would be like an interesting new look at it. And this looks like it's sort of a run of the mill, the government's got secrets, and like, what is it that Rufus and Dr. Fake Elon Musk,
yes, exactly,
are doing here. I do love that they made him basically Elon Musk. They're like, my friend has one of your cars.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, now we know we know who we're talking about now. But the idea that Elon Musk could have like run amok and accidentally and like created a time machine.
Which, you know, we don't know. Maybe he has
who
already.
Who knows what those guys are up to? Jeff Bezos could be, he's talking about drones, but who knows what those are really going to be used for?
I mean, Bezos knows, but we don't know.
What if he's just trying to get drones to as many places around the world as he can so that they can all activate at once and like emit, I don't know, an oxygen blast that would like save the environment?
Or it could all move us out of sync with time and send us to the island like Lost. So he could do any of those things.
I'd do that though. Like,
yeah, I would. We have to go back.
Actually, it's a real violent place. As much as I love that show, I don't want to go back.
Yeah, we'll just watch.
But so I can't decide, and like we'll talk about like next episodes in a minute. But
but it's a good point. I do wonder what we're going to see that we haven't. I'm always very hesitant around any time travel that deals with major events because of what we talked about. You know, because you have to sort of tread lightly, because if you decide, oh, we are going to change this event, well, then that's going to be a domino effect throughout the course of your whole show that you went and changed the Hindenburg or something even much more.
And they do, like at the end of it, like stuff has changed. Like, and that was like that's what I'll give them, is that the result of that, of like, okay, well, butterfly effect, like, yeah, you know, we all know the butterfly effect, but the fact that like she went back and spoilers for the end of the episode, she went back and like they crashed the Hindenburg a day late, but it still crashed. So like stuff still unfolded close, but not quite the same. Now her mother doesn't have cancer anymore, but her sister was never born. and she's now engaged to a mystery man she doesn't know. We haven't met him yet, but that's going to get real interesting. That is an interesting thing to see, and that made me want to come back a little bit.
Yeah, but I think, again, network pilot, they need to try and get you back a week later.
Yeah.
So you definitely want to have a lot of, like, wait, what the hell just happened?
It's the government conspiracy thing that really just, like, put me off. Like, the hint at a government conspiracy. Because they're setting it up as a mystery, and frankly, NBC as a network has yet to give... They don't have the benefit of the doubt with me to pay off a mystery. There are very few networks that do, like HBO and Netflix, obviously, like they've earned my benefit of the doubt at this point. NBC, other than Grimm, I'm not watching any of their dramas. And so they've mostly, Grimm is something that they're like, sort of like, we don't know how this works. Just leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that NBC had Hannibal on for 3 seasons.
Because
that was one of my favorite shows. And I'm like, it doesn't belong on this network, but thanks for making it.
Yeah. And yeah, Media Shack's talking about like how production values are like Z Nation like gets by on like very quick, and like they use their low budget to their advantage.
Yeah.
That's part of the charm of that show, is that it's fun because it's so insane. And this show like has a higher budget for some of these effects and costumes, and time travel is always very expensive. Like just ask Legends of Tomorrow on CW. There's a reason that show has a smaller episode order, because it's very expensive to have almost no standing sets.
Yeah, no, I could see how that would definitely be a problem.
Yeah. So let's talk. We're just going to talk about the pilot episode for Luke Cage.
I feel like I can't even say Sweet Christmas because he doesn't say it in the pilot.
Yeah, but he's already said it in Jessica Jones, right. So it's fine.
All right, good.
Yeah, but Sweet Christmas this episode. I watched the pilot a couple times. I haven't finished. I'm only like 6 episodes in because I'm doing the after show with Jesse and some other folks from over at AfterBuzz. But the pilot left me with, like, especially the first time I watched it was middle of the night, because I watched it like right as it aired.
At 12:01.
It left me with chills because of the ending. What did you think of the Luke Cage pilot?
All right, so I loved the pilot, and you know, again, we're only talking about the pilot, and I even tweeted this as I was watching it. I was like 5 minutes in, and I'm like, you know what? If the whole show is Luke sweeping up hair at Pop's barbershop, I'm gonna be okay, because I love these characters. I like that they're all here. I love this world, and I could watch it. Now, of course, it's not a very good superhero show if that's all there is. So then they get out of Pop's barbershop, and, you know, he goes and works at the nightclub and all that. At least I think that's the pilot. I hope that's the pilot. Yeah, that's definitely the pilot. So that's the problem when you watch 8 in a day, is you're like, wait, what happens in the pilot versus episode 6? But I thought it was great, and you just get the hint of, like, there's all these characters, like, well, this is interesting. Oh, what's her deal? You know, what's his deal and all this stuff? So I mean, I was immediately rewarded because I kept watching, but it works great in that way of, like, hooking any viewer to want to know more about, because this Luke Cage, it's a different world than the Luke Cage being part of Jessica Jones' world. This is all of his own stuff. Yeah, I know Turk's there, but other than that, it's really, you know, it's really its own thing. And I thought it was a great job, and I love Luke, and obviously Pop was great too. Everybody's great, but those are the ones that stood out. I was like, I just like these characters.
Yeah,
and acting.
In terms of a pilot, and we're gonna go a little lighter on the Luke Cage, because like I know that like we've both watched ahead, and so it's tough to like not give spoilers away. But the pilot episode, what really shone for me, like, was that they were able to. This is a show that is it felt very, very unique, and because of its setting, that was it is an interesting hybrid of 70s era Harlem with modern day Harlem. Like the issues that modern day Harlem is dealing with a little bit in terms,
and even the music, like, does that. It feels very 70s but contemporary at the same time.
It's very interesting, but it's going to tackle a lot of the issues with like Black Lives Matter and with just like what it is to be in this community, and it is so unapologetically Black that it really does feel unique in a way that nothing else that Netflix or, like, especially Netflix Marvel, but also just general television has done. In the pilot, there's not very much science fiction. That comes much more down the line, and without any giving any spoilers away, when you get to Luke's origin story, that's where you get some really cool science stuff that I think is going to tie back to stuff like in Jessica Jones that was like with IGH, the company that caused her and Daredevil's powers to be given to them. And so it, like, whether or not it is, like, well, it's still, I'm, at least for me, remains to be seen. But I think that's going to be very interesting as we see the science of what has happened to him go forward and how the public reacts once, like, people start to find out about him. But in these in this episode, just like the unbreakable skin in the fight is so perfectly choreographed and done in like this simple way that the way that Mike Coulter carried the character, this calm, like, but just like, I don't want to do this, what it showed a character that I've been waiting to see on TV for years.
Yeah, because we've seen the reluctant hero in a variety of ways, but I feel like he really nailed this very specific tone because he's like, you know, when I start to do these things, trouble seems to follow me, you know, and he's just alluding to everything. He's just like, I just want to pay me in cash. I'm just going to keep my head down. I'm not going to get involved. And I think that he strikes that tone perfectly in the pilot.
Yeah. We do have to ask with all these pilots as we look across them, all of them, what would Neil deGrasse Tyson say about these pilots?
Seeing is not believing.
Yeah. So I think Westworld, I would say that like the most, because basically when we ask what Neil deGrasse Tyson would say, like what would a scientist say about these things? I think the question, what part of why I really loved it as a sci-fi fan, was that it asks all the questions that you would have when you have artificial intelligence. What denotes like intelligence and being and like those little things that get changed, like when you have when you make a change in a programming, when something changes in your life, what else is it going to affect, and you can't possibly predict it all. And Jeff Goldblum is real happy because the chaos effect is in full effect on this pilot. What do you think about with Westworld?
I think that, you know, you feel like you can, as hard to believe as the concept is from a realistic standpoint, you can believe it on the screen because everybody inhabits their world really well. You know, there's the artificial world, the actual Westworld, but there's the people behind it. And you just believe like, yeah, this makes perfect sense that people would go to this place, that these people are in charge of it. I buy into it. And that's kind of all I need. I can sometimes have a problem with some sci-fi where you'll just sort of look and go, really? I don't know if that's really, you know, that doesn't look quite right, you know? So, so I'm on board. I don't know if Neil deGrasse Tyson would be, but I'm in.
Yeah. With Timeless, there's only slowly establishing the rules of the time travel. Yeah. Like, so it can affect the future. Only the people that have traveled will remember the alternate timeline, which is interesting. It sort of follows standard Back to the Future rules. Like, yeah, you can change the past. But once you come back, like, what you remember, like, they don't remember the new timeline.
Right.
At least as far as we can see yet. I wonder if that's going to course correct or if it's going to be a case where, like, every time they travel, like, they change a little thing. And that means every time they come back, it's, like, it's a new future.
Right. And like, how significant are those changes?
Like, you know? Is Logan's wife going to be alive now? Is, like, when they do it the next time, will his wife be dead? And will her sister, will Lucy's sister be alive again? But the mom's now dead and not, like, she died of cancer years ago. Like, how much will this affect their lives? And then that's what could keep me interested in the show is, like, okay, so your time travel basics and fixing things is, like, sort of one-off episodic. Fine, whatever, that could be fun adventures. Yeah. If it is truly about like how that changes these characters' lives and what happens to them as they go, that is something I'm interested in.
Yeah, I was going to say, for the sake of the creators, I hope that they have really mapped out what these time travel rules are and, you know, what all the things that you're saying. I hope that they know all the answers. They don't have to put it on the screen for episodes 2, 3, or 4, but they should know as they break those stories and they start writing them, because then they're going to paint themselves into a corner. And if you start explaining things away, where you're just like, well, time travel, yeah, you know, they better know exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah. So as we wrap out of here, quick question. Will you keep watching the shows? Westworld.
Yes.
Emphatically, yes. This could, yeah, this could very well, if it continues with this quality, it could very well be up there in like the top shows.
I have a friend who's writing season 2, so I will continue watching no matter what.
All right. That's, yeah. Ring, that's, well, you're sort of like handcuffed.
Yeah, I kind of have to.
Timeless. I'm going to give my standard 3 episodes.
Yeah.
I'm willing to watch one more. I'm not going to rush to. I might. This might be a binge watch.
I think you're right. Let 2 and 3 kind of pile up, and then I'll watch them together.
You know what? You know what? Here's what I'm going to do with Timeless, because I just don't have time right now, because The Flash just came back. I don't even have time to watch it. I'm going to let Timeless play out. I'm going to let Timeless play out, and as it does, If it doesn't get canceled, yeah, I will binge it.
I've definitely done that with shows. It gets canceled after 5 episodes, then I don't bother.
Luke Cage, like, look, I was going to watch no matter what, and I'll watch everything that Marvel's going to put out. Last thing we got to do, the sci-fi moment of the week for this past week. Christian, real quick, what was yours?
Real quick, I don't even know the episode number, but it is the Luke Cage origin story episode. That was everything I wanted. I'm not even going to give anything away. Everything I wanted from Luke Cage was in that episode.
That was episode 5, I believe.
Okay.
Captain Travis, his sci-fi moment of the week was creating some Star Wars themed cocktails.
Nice.
Which
All
is
right.
awesome. And I want you to send, like, tweet Captain Travis, tweet those to us.
Yeah.
And I will retweet them out, because, like, I want to know what they are, because that sounds awesome. Chill Cat says, the premiere of Westworld. Yep. Easy to do robots with props, but harder for actors to play robots believably. I assume he's saying that they pulled it off, which I feel they actually did.
Yeah, twitches and awkward moments were great for the actors who played the androids or the hosts.
Yeah, for me, I would say it was probably the Luke Cage origin story, because of the way, like, I watched it in a group with the rest of my after show team, and we just all started squeeing when he did that, and then, like, little spoilers, came out in costume. His costume was on for a split second.
Honestly, if they'd stopped with the headband, that would have been enough for me. So it was great, though.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap out of here. Christian, thank you so much for filling in
today.
Oh,
so happy to do it.
Jesse Klein will be back next week with us. Guys, I'm your host, Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson. Christian, where can everyone find you?
I'm Christian Blatt at ChristianDMZ on Twitter and Instagram. And I have my own podcast, The Blattcast, BLADTCAST.com.
All right, guys, this has been Sci-Fi Weekly. And thanks for geeking out with us.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.